chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. One of the important people who'll be gathering in our town this weekend is the U.S. Surgeon General Regina Benjamin. She's the commencement speaker for the UNC Gillen School of Global Public Health. And, you know, while she's here, I'd like her to talk about the condition of American and Americans' health and healthiness. Obesity, old age is getting to be kind of an interesting thing. What are the public health implications of some of the weather events that we've got? And all the other things that must be at the top of the list for the Surgeon General. Surgeon General, you're an admiral, you're a Surgeon General, you're a doctor. Regina Benjamin, how do you like to be addressed?
Well, Regina sounds pretty cool.
Oh, that's pretty nice. you better watch out because I'll jump on that. That'll be easier.
Official title, I guess, is United States Surgeon General. However, my rank is a vice admiral or a three-star admiral. So that gets confusing sometimes. But for all of my professional career, I've been a physician, so I generally have people just call me Dr. Benjamin.
So you're most doctors who are proud of that profession and the degree that accompanies it, they think doctor is the...
And also, I'm considered America's doctor. And
right.
I have 300 million Americans as my patients.
How do you view your role as America's doctors and all the rest of us as your... Hey, is the people that you look, you know, sort of like you're a community doctor. You wouldn't. It's not just when we get sick, but you would be looking out for our health all along.
I'm a family physician, and as a family doctor, and I spent 23 years in my little office that we call it a clinic now, but it was just I was mainly in solo practice for most of that, and I treat each patient as a patient, as an individual, and as America's doctors, the same way. Instead of looking out for each person's particular interest, I'm looking out for the health of the entire community, the health of the entire nation. But the health of the entire nation also has different pockets, different groups that have some different concerns and interests.
You know, we have the big ongoing debate about the reform of health care, some people, I don't know whether it's complementary or not. Some people call it the Obamacare, but which works on providing a basis for taking care of people when they get sick or when they have some kind of health condition. But really, the place where you can make an impact long term is sort of where you are, taking care of the health conditions and the positive things about healthcare. How do you?
Well, the biggest thing for me, and I'm a little, you'll see I'm a little biased on this, but the biggest thing in the, we call it the Affordable Care Act, health reform, is prevention. And in this act, it established a National Prevention Council. And the law actually established the council and me as its chair.
Wow.
And so I am chairing this National Prevention Council, which is made up of 17 cabinet-level members, all looking at prevention and how we can make government focused on preventing people from getting sick in the first place. So that's everything from seat belts and helmets to clean air to good jobs to making sure that the environment's clean, that people are able to exercise, making the entire community healthy. And so that's very important when I look at the Affordable Care Act and what that means.
So in your role in a positive reaction to it, you know, North Carolina was one of the big tobacco farming states and also involved heavily in the production of cigarettes. But I think most North Carolinians would agree now that one of the great public health victories was the effort to reduce smoking in America, and that's got to be, although it's not complete victory. It's got to be viewed as one of the public health successes. What would be?
It is.
What would be, in your view, what would be online to be competitive with reducing smoking in terms of the kinds of things that Americans could do or that we could encourage Americans to do that would make...
I want to get back to smoking because that's one of my...
All right, we'll let you talk about smoking some more.
My platforms and my priorities. But, you know, just being able to have a safe environment, anti-violence, anti-bullying, those things make a healthy community as well. When we have a healthy community, we can have healthy individuals. And so involving the various departments, like in addition to Health and Human Services, we have housing and urban development. We need to make sure we have, you know, good housing. And we found that elderly communities, for example, if they're built in a certain way, for example, if a community is built with front porches, the elderly people tend to stay active longer. So there are a number of health things that we can see. We can see that if we build a community and build sidewalks, well-lit places in it that are safe, people will tend to walk and exercise more. Bringing in all these sorts of things, bringing in Department of Labor, I have a Surgeon General's call to action that I put out recently, I guess it was February of this year, on supporting breastfeeding. One of the things we want to do is ask people to help women who want to breastfeed, support them. Don't make them feel guilty for taking a 15-minute break to go and breastfeed or to, you know, pump. Encourage them, because we know there are many health benefits.
What are the payoffs in public health from the encouragement for increased breastfeeding?
The first and most obvious is the benefits to the baby. The baby gets the mother's antibodies and protected against colds and flus and illnesses. But babies also have other things that they're protected against. Things like sudden infant death syndrome, you don't associate that, but that's one of the things. We know that babies who are exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months of life are less likely to be obese. The mother also gets benefits. The mother is less likely to have breast cancer or ovarian cancer. So there are a number of benefits there.
How can you, without being, you know, authoritarian, how can you encourage women to mothers to breastfeed, and the rest of us to...
Well, basically, just to be supportive. It used to be that, you know, the moms and the grandmoms and the aunts would be the ones who would teach the new mother how to breastfeed and the things she needed to do and encourage her. Many of the moms and grandmoms now haven't breastfed themselves, so we have lactation specialists that are there to help. We also encourage the fathers to be involved, just to encourage her and to know that there are health benefits. One of the things we ask businesses to do is to do something as simple as provide a clean and private room for the mom to breastfeed or pump, a room other than a bathroom. Just that simple little thing.
How do you encourage people to do this? You don't have that much leverage, do you?
No, I don't think you should. It's mainly a thing that we want people to, you know, encourage them to be supportive. A lot of women don't want to breastfeed. Some can't breastfeed, and so they shouldn't be made to feel guilty. But those who want to, just give them the encouragement they need.
Well, you know, you mentioned that the breastfeeding, that a child who's breastfed is less likely to be obese, and I thought you were going to jump all over obesity to start with, because it's my impression that that's the number one today. That's the number one public health challenge that America
faces.
It is,
and it was my first paper that I released as Surgeon General, is the Surgeon General's Vision for a Healthy and Fit Nation, and addressing just that issue. And I kind of released it at a press conference with the Secretary Sebelius of the HHS and the First Lady. And then 2 weeks later, we kind of geared up for the First Lady's Let's Move initiative that focused only on, not only, but focused on relieving on children. And that movement, as you know, is very successful. But we need to look at obesity and overweight as an entire nation as well. But we know that the best place to start is with our children, because right there in North Carolina, a study was shown that children as young as age 3 show signs of changes in their blood vessels and things because of their obese, as that can harm them later in life. So we want to make sure that kids get a good start and to be playing and active. And one of the things I've put in my paper particularly is that I want to change that national conversation from obesity and overweight to a positive conversation about being healthy and being fit. We need to get kids and adults to start exercising and being healthy because it's fun, because they enjoy it, because it's something they want to do. And teach them about, you know, stop talking about what they can't have, they can't do, and tell them what they can do to be healthy and be fit. They can go out and play. They can have fun. They can enjoy themselves. You know, people our age used to go out and disco, and we didn't do it because somebody said go do 30 minutes of aerobics exercise. We did it because we had fun, and we thought we were looking good.
Well, it's got to be a little bit discouraging. At least it is for me in sort of looking at the health of our nation 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. Watching for two things. One, just walking down the street and seeing a lot of people who would be a lot happier if they were carrying around fewer pounds. But then having friends who are overweight and who seem to be, you know, who recognize the challenge, who seem to work at it real hard but just can't make progress on it. It looks just like it's endemic.
You know, it is. It's hard, and it can be challenging. We have to make it easier. And that's one of the roles, I think, of government, is to make those healthy choices the easy choices and the affordable choices. You know, I fly a lot, so if I go in an airport or traveling, it's hard to find healthy options that aren't more expensive.
Boy, it really is.
We need to find a way to make, you know, not just one healthy option, but many of the options healthier, and try to find ways to bring those costs down. The other thing is just to get it back as part of our culture. You know, I've been trying to do Surgeon General's walks around the country. We walked in Baltimore, around the harbor, around lunchtime one time after a meeting, or actually during a meeting at lunchtime, and people came out and started joining us, just walking. We walked up in Boston at Harvard, and we called it White Coats and White Sneakers.
That's great.
Did a few other cities, and back in, I guess it was the fall, I did one I wouldn't call a walk. I kind of call it a hike. I did the Grand Canyon, and rim to rim, which is 26.2
miles. You went around the Grand Canyon or up and down?
I went up and down.
Up and down?
Well, actually, it's down 5,000 feet and then up.
Down and up.
With a camera crew, by the way.
And did you spend the night, or did you do this?
Yeah, spent the night overnight and got up and walked out the next morning. The point was that, and the point of having a camera crew is that I'm not a big exercise buff, and I'm just an average person. And the idea is that if I can do it, anyone can do it. And just all you have to do is enjoy it. It was beautiful scenery. You don't have to go to the Grand Canyon. You can just walk around your own neighborhood, take some friends, and just get out there and have a good time.
We're visiting with the Surgeon General of the United States, Regina Benjamin. She and I'll be right back after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. The Surgeon General of the United States, Regina Benjamin, is coming to Chapel Hill to be the graduation speaker, the commencement speaker at the UNC Gillen School of Public Health. And because I'm excited and interested in public health concerns and issues, I was delighted when she agreed to give us a little preliminary about her visit. And Surgeon General Benjamin, I know that you're at least thinking about some of the things that it might be appropriate to talk to the graduates of this great school of public health that you're coming to visit. What are some of the things that might be on your mind as possibilities to challenge the graduates and the folks who will be, the public health supporters who will be gathering for the commencement ceremonies?
Well, I'm certainly going to talk about what my priorities as Surgeon General is, and they're all based on prevention. And so to cover some of the areas of prevention and how prevention can make us, as we practice it, can make us a more healthy and fit nation. But more importantly for kids.
How about, let me interrupt you just sure. because this is an area of my interest in terms of the things that might be at the top of your list. And we won't hold you accountable for mentioning all of them because there's so many. But illustrate some of these, I would just call them challenges or opportunities that are in front of the country right now that are on your priority list.
Again, everything's based on prevention. Everything from HIV/AIDS. We know that we have drugs to treat HIV/AIDS, but people are still getting infected, so they need to get tested. And so we need to make sure that people get tested so they can be treated. We also have high rates of new infections, particularly in women and girls. We talked a little bit earlier about breastfeeding. I think that's one area. Another area, of course, is the obesity, which we talked about a little bit. Then there's another topic, actually two others. One is the prescription drug misuse, particularly in youth. I have a paper, a call to action, and coming out on that. That is becoming a very, very serious problem. I had a patient in Bialobattery who they do something they call fishing with a pH, where the kids will go in a cabinet, in a medicine cabinet, get the medicines of their parents and grandparents, take them to a party, put them in a big bowl, and reach in and get a handful and take the pills and drink alcohol. And one of my little patients who was 20 years old died from that. She just didn't wake up the next morning. So it's becoming a major problem. So having people understand about misusing prescription drugs. Another area, and we're going to be releasing next week, is medication adherence, meaning having people understand how to take their medications correctly. And we have so many medicines hanging around. We need to know how to dispose of them properly, but we need to know how to take them the right way.
And before you move on this topic, is there's some of us who have the impression that the that one of the big public health challenges is that we might be over-medicated, not just abused, but that Americans might be taking more medicines than they need. Do you have any sense of that, and are there strategies to deal with that?
Well, again, I'm a family physician, and patients would come in the office. The first thing any good family doctor or primary care doctor will do is sit down with them and go over the medications and see which ones we can get rid of. And oftentimes you can get rid of many of them, but, sometimes you can't. But that's the first thing we have to do is try to get a patient on as few medications as possible and work towards getting them off of many as possible.
I want to, you think of your colleagues as in a regular family medical practice as you were before you became Surgeon General. And you deal with your patients who are taking medicines, and you can't boss them around. And they're being barraged on television by all kinds of ads that imply that if you take this medicine, you're going to be happy or your life is going to be better if you take it.
We do have that quite a bit. And patients, having educated patients is very important. So some of these ads are important that they understand what medications are available. But I always remind patients that when a medicine's being advertised, it's being advertised to get you to buy it. And so there's a reason for that. And so we need to choose the best medicine for you, not the best advertised medicine.
Well, is there a public health challenge? Nobody can tell you how to do your job, but
you can.
But is there a concern at the Surgeon General's level of, as there was with smoking and as there continues to be with smoking, that you have that prescription drugs, as advertised, ought to be accompanied not by this soft a warning underneath while the symphony music is playing, but just the big bold warnings that are on cigarette packages now that prescription drugs might be dangerous to your health. You know,
well, they can be, but remember that many of the prescription drugs are very helpful, and there are a lot of people out there who really need those medicines. And so that's why it's really a balance that we have to walk very carefully, because if you've ever been around someone in chronic pain, they need their pain medicine.
I mean, right.
They really need it, and so you don't want them not to be able to get it, but you also don't want people misusing it. And misusing any drug can be dangerous.
Is the real danger in the misuse of drugs in the arena of the, I would just call it deliberate misuse, that is, people who are looking for highs or for, to do something like the kids in this fishing experiment?
Sometimes some people will have, you know, certain type pains, and they become dependent on it, on the medication. So you have a combination of both.
Well, I interrupted you about the things that concern you, and the things might be on the list of matters that you might mention.
There's one other one that I really want to mention,
yeah.
And that is violence and violence in our society. We're coming out with a paper on youth violence, particularly, and we're seeing so much violence in society that we had a Surgeon General's report 10 years ago that showed that youth violence is a public health issue, is at the level of a public health issue. Unfortunately, it's still there. But since that 10 years ago, that report, we've learned ways that have been proven scientifically to decrease violence in society and violence and bullying and things like that. So we need to implement some of those and start to treat youth violence as a public health issue. In addition to, you know, it's, and traditionally it's been treated as a criminal justice issue, and it certainly has to be treated as a criminal justice, but also used in public health approaches.
What are the resources that you and that the local and state public health authorities have to apply some kind of resources or attention to this particular challenge?
Well, we've had a number of CDC grants that's been out there, and that's where much of the science has come from, that have shown some programs that work. One is called STRIVE, and I think it stands for Stopping Youth Violence or something. But that one has shown to work, working in the schools as well as at home, because violence isn't just in one spot. It's everywhere, and it affects the entire community. So using programs to have the youth themselves be not just advocates, but they're the ones who are open to their friends and helping their friends out and looking out for each other and teaching them how to recognize the warning signs.
Along those lines, a lot of people argue that guns are a public health hazard in the United States, and it, when you start arguing about that, you run into another viewpoint of people who feel like that being able to have a weapon is a public health positive in protecting family from violence from other people. And can the Surgeon General get involved? Do you have any concerns about this?
Well, I mean, that is an ongoing challenge, and that's where in this country we have our freedoms, and then we have to look at, you know, the health of society in general. And so we need to be responsible. We need to teach people how to use guns appropriately. There's some guns that, you know, the average person will say, why do we have those in the streets, like Uzis and, you know, those rapidly firing things. They're not built to hunt or be recreational. They're built for one reason, and that is to kill. And there's a good argument there that we have to start to think about that. But as, you know, as our rights are, you know, we have a right to bear arms.
Well, we're visiting with the Surgeon General of the United States, Regina Benjamin. She is she's coming down to Chapel Hill to be the commencement speaker at the UNC Gillens School of Global Public Health. And she's been very generous in sharing some of her time with her. And we're going to continue our conversation after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is the Surgeon General of the United States, Regina Benjamin. She is a doctor, a physician, a family physician, who's now America's doctor. She's the family physician for all Americans, including everybody who's listening to this program, and also to everybody who'll be in attendance at the commencement ceremonies for the School of Public Health. So thanks for giving us this little preview of some of the things you might be talking about, Surgeon General.
You know, D.G., one of the things we have to talk about is smoking.
All right, yeah, you kind of dance around when you're in North Carolina talking about smoking, but I think, you know, we've been converted. In 10 years ago, you could smoke everywhere on the campus at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, or almost everywhere. Now you can't smoke anywhere. They're 50 feet around a tree in the middle of campus. Every place else is off limits. And Durham, for instance, which was the big tobacco town, is now it promotes it as a health center, as a center for health. So although we do love our tobacco farmers and it's part of our culture, I think you'll be happy that we're allies. That most North Carolinians are allies for the Surgeon General in terms of the effort to reduce or eliminate smoking.
Yeah, and I've seen that too, and I agree with that. In December, I released a Surgeon General's report on how tobacco smoke causes disease, and it was a 700-page report. It had 64 scientists to contribute to that report. We also put out a consumer booklet, which is only about 10 or 15 pages, but big print, so that people can understand it. But the main thing about that report is that it talked about how the cigarette smoke itself causes disease. We knew that cigarette smoke causes cancer, but we didn't know how. Now we have the science to tell us how. For example, whenever you inhale tobacco smoke, the delicate lining of your blood vessels are affected immediately, and it even changes and affects the DNA, and so it affects your entire body. We know that there's 7,000 chemicals in tobacco smoke, so every time you inhale, you're getting those chemicals. Over 700 of those chemicals can cause cancer. Another area that we really highlighted in this particular report is that tobacco smoking is addicting. Everybody knew it, but they didn't know how. Now we know some of the reasons why. Some of the tobacco companies would put additives in the cigarettes. And, for example, there's nicotine is one of those chemicals in tobacco. We know that when you add ammonia to nicotine, it changes, and this is probably more chemistry you want to know, but it changes the nicotine to what we call free nicotine. And that free nicotine crosses the blood-brain barrier much faster, making it more addictive.
You're as you talk about these things that you are learning, does it open up new doors for you to take different or to encourage the government to take different actions?
Well, the government's been taking really strong actions. About almost 2 years ago now, we passed a law that allows the FDA to regulate tobacco, and that was a new tobacco as a drug. So we have the regulations. I think it's really important, though, that people understand how this tobacco smoke works, because, for example, with the addiction, we just throw around the term, yes, it's addicting, but now we know how and why. And so we know that when people try to stop smoking, why it takes them so many attempts and why we shouldn't be, we should be supportive of them if they have to try a few times.
Is it bad enough so that maybe you or some of your colleagues think that it's not enough just to regulate it, but that it should be outlawed like some of the other mind-altering drugs, or like most of the other mind-altering drugs that are in the marketplace today?
Well, I'm an American who just believes in individual rights, and I think that if society wants to outlaw it, I mean, we would have a grassroots upheaval and say, let's do that. But my approach is to give people information and let them make decisions for themselves.
I'm kind of two minds about it myself. I remember growing up, notwithstanding all the horrible things that we've learned about nicotine and tobacco, and particularly smoking tobacco, I remember so many of my grandparents' friends and my parents' friends who got an extraordinarily positive experience from coming home, lighting up the cigarette, and enjoying whatever that experience was.
I saw that too, and I watched it. Actually, I grew up, and I guess that's probably why I'm so passionate about it. My mother actually died of lung cancer.
Wow.
And one of the things I saw, I was in public health, and I was on the state committee of public health, and a few years after her death, you know, they were putting up numbers and statistics, and they show you how many people die and of what diseases and where. And there was a chart there that had the number of people who had died of lung cancer, and in it was the number of women, the number of African Americans, and this particular county, in my mother's county.
Oh my God!
And it was one, and I knew that what
oh
that number.
Oh my golly! You got to be kidding! It was one person there.
That was
my mama.
That was mama.
Oh gosh!
And you know,
oh,
and it, it became real. I mean, it was real before, but it really became real. That these numbers, not just statistics.
Well, I think we got to leave this, or I'm going to break down in tears on this one. But that's a great story, and thanks for sharing it with us. The other sort of the legal drug of choice, once you get around tobacco and prescription drugs, is alcohol. And how does alcohol fit in the nation's approach to public health? It's quite legal to drink now, and the experiment with prohibition didn't work. Is alcohol a positive, a negative? How do you view it from a surgeon?
It can be both. Some people have no problems with alcohol at all. Other people have real problems. And some people will have an addictive behavior, and they can be addicted to alcohol, drugs, and everything else. Others, it's genetics. And so here and again comes education and understanding yourself, understanding how the substance works. We know that alcohol is often involved in a number of things, and so it's important to recognize the warning signs when you start to get into the area of trouble with alcohol. Are you drinking more than a certain number of drinks per day? Can you function without it, or are you drinking during times when you shouldn't be? I mean, there's a number of alcohol warning signs that we can give you. And in fact, there is HHS has a department called SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, who has wonderful information there just to have you recognize when you may be starting to get in trouble.
We're visiting with the Surgeon General of the United States, Regina Benjamin. She's looking at Chapel Hill because she's going to give the commencement address at the commencement for UNC Gillings School of Global Public Health. She and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Regina Benjamin. For those of you just joining us late, she is I don't want to say in real life, but she is formally, and maybe sometime in the future, I think happily, a family physician, and is now America's physician. And she's sharing with us, I think the great thing about the conversation with you, Surgeon General, is that we're getting the perspective of somebody who could just, you know, be my doctor and taking care of me and giving me the quiet advice about how my life might be better if I would, you know,
lose a little bit
of weight, stop smoking so much, maybe be careful with my drinking, and just getting a little bit more exercise, and at the same time,
taking control of your own life and your own health.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. It's not someone else's. It's not the government's role. It's not anybody's. It's yours. and it's your opportunity to be healthy and be fit. And we can help you with that, but that's your, it's ultimately your decision.
Well, as you come and deliver the message, which will include some of the things that we've been talking about, the challenges of America's public health, that's going to be real important for the public health graduates to hear it from somebody in the position that you hold. The other thing that I think is going to be real impressive for the graduates of the School of Public Health is to have someone whom they can identify with as a colleague. You know, you're not that old, and you have an experience that parallels many of those, both white and black and Hispanic kids who've grown up in a South that's changing. And so I don't know whether you'll be talking about that. Maybe it won't be appropriate for you to talk
a
about
little
it. Would
bit.
Would you talk to us about it? Tell
yeah,
us about
I mean,
growing
I will
up.
Be, I will be talking about it in a little bit of a different way. One of the things I like to talk about is leadership and that everyone's a leader and how important it is and how important it is to lead by example. And people look up to you, and they're going to look up to these kids who are graduating because many of them, their neighbors, their family members, sometimes they will be the first people to graduate or to get an advanced degree. And so people will start looking at them as leaders, and so they have responsibilities. Oftentimes people don't you don't know who's watching you. I'll often tell people you're being watched, and you don't even know it. I know that I used to get my name in a paper or a magazine or something, and a reporter would call and want to ask questions, the same thing, I'd be seeing patients, and I didn't want to be bothered until one day I got an envelope in the mail, and it was like one of those manila envelopes filled with letters from a second grade class.
Oh, wow.
And every one of them said, I want to be a doctor just like you.
Just like you.
And I realized that, you know, those articles and things weren't about me at all. It was about those second grade kids who may be watching or reading that newspaper. That
is
day.
Such a great story. Well, tell us about, I mean, you grew up in the Deep South. Tell us about that and what challenges you faced as you developed an ambition to be a physician and then carried forth with it.
Well, I grew up in a little town outside of Mobile, Alabama called Daphne. And my family's been there since the early 1800s. So, as they say, I'm American by birth, but Southern by the grace of God. So a true Southerner. And, you know, I always knew I wanted to go to college. It was instilled in me to go to college. I didn't know where or how. I just knew I wanted to go. And, in fact, I didn't know I wanted to be a doctor, but because I hadn't seen a doctor till I was in college.
You're
but
kidding me. Is that right? Wow.
It wasn't that I couldn't be. It just wasn't in my thought process. I mean, it just wasn't a thought. I just wanted to go to college. It didn't matter what.
Let me just be blunt. As you were growing up in Mobile, really deep south, but it's also, you know, it's close to the coast. What was it like for an African-American young woman to be growing up during the times that you grew up there? And did you have a feeling that you were being denied some opportunities because of your race? And if you did, how'd you overcome
it? It was never a stumbling block. It was never anything. I always had, my family always taught me good self-esteem, and, you know, we were as good as anyone else and not better than others, but as, you know, the same. So it wasn't something you concentrate, you know, they didn't concentrate on it. You just lived your life the best you could and helped your neighbors, help people who were not as well off. So it wasn't a hardship, you know, it was an enjoyable life. And I grew up and I went to integrated schools. And so actually when I was in the, I guess, fourth or fifth grade, it was only seven blacks in the school and five of us were cousins.
Oh, is that right?
So it was never an issue of integration, but, you know, things were going on around and we knew about it, but you used that as a challenge and an inspiration to continue.
You mentioned that you lost your mother to lung cancer, and how about your dad?
I lost my immediate family to preventable diseases. My father had a stroke and hypertension, so that could have been preventable. And my brother died of HIV, and so my only sibling. So that's why.
So you're alone because didn't do as good a job as we might have done as a country in the public health field of calling attention to and reducing the risk of
things we could have prevented. That's
that's
exactly
got to be every day on your mind as a
surgeon. And I don't want other people to have to go through that.
Yeah,
I don't feel alone. I have lots and lots of cousins, and my mother's twin brother who had six kids, and so we're a lot of first cousins, so they're like sisters, and but. You know, I don't want anyone else to have to go through grief and loss that can be prevented.
Well, listen, the folks down here at Chapel Hill are pretty family-oriented, too, and we're glad that you're coming. We're going to declare you to be a part of our family as well.
Thank you.
For those who joined us late, we've been talking to the Surgeon General of the United States, Regina Benjamin. She is the commencement speaker. The 2011 commencement speaker at the UNC Gillen School of Public Health, and we're real excited about her being in Chapel Hill. Thanks, Surgeon General.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to all y'all for listening. This has been Who's Talking, and it's D.G. Martin, and I'll be right back here before you know it.